Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
You know, in boxing, how they have all those different classifications, WBA, WBC, they go to have a title fight, and they go, well, this is for the WBC belt, but it's not for the other belt. John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News is the undisputed Pac-12 guru. There's no other belt. There's only one, and Wilner's wearing it. He's joining us now. Pac-12, Big 12 talking. What's going on with those talks, Wilner?
Well, I think it's just that. It's some preliminary conversations. I mean, this whole thing, however it ends up for the Pac-12, whether they do nothing or they expand or they create some kind of scheduling alliance, it's going to take months. And the Pac-12's got a new commissioner. And the Big 12's commissioner used to work in the Pac-12. So, you know, it makes sense for there to be conversations. I would imagine the Pac-12 is going to talk to the Big 10, too, and maybe the ACC, and who knows what else. But preliminary conversation that makes sense, and, you know, we're months away from any kind of resolution.
I think that the Big 10 makes more sense to me, with the Rose Bowl being part of it. Am I being nostalgic here, Wilner, or is there a shot the presidents and chancellors of the Pac-12 and the Big 10 will get together?
No, I think that makes way more sense for the Pac-12 than a scheduling alliance with the Big 12 that doesn't involve Texas and Oklahoma, right? Those are the two big draws for TV. You do a scheduling alliance because you want TV ratings and money. You take those two big draws out, and what's left? Whereas something with the Big 10, where they have the Rose Bowl, they have the history together, you got Ohio State and Michigan and, you know, Penn State, Wisconsin, that to me makes a lot more sense in terms of the media value that it would bring to the Pac-12 if they could, you know, make the logistics work. How many games? How do you set the rotation? All that kind of stuff.
John Wilner, San Jose Mercury News, is with us. I kind of feel like the move for the Pac-12 is to sit tight, and what I gathered from Media Day is the conference feels kind of comfortable sort of with its existing members, unless there's a no-brainer option that somebody falls out, you know, Notre Dame suddenly comes and says, hey, we want to be part of it, now you have a conversation. But what did you make of Media Day last week, Wilner? What were your big takeaways?
Well, the big thing that I just watching George Kulikoff, you know, I thought he had a good command during his remarks of the situation. A couple of things jumped out. One was that, in contrast to his predecessor, he talked about football first and the Olympic sports second. And I thought that was very telling, right? I mean, it is clear that he is focused on football and men's basketball, and that he has the support of the athletic directors and the presidents in doing that. And that's the only option for the conference at this point. It cannot sit back and rest on, you know, all those national championships of water polo and golf. It has got to be focused on football right now for its very survival. The fact that he made football the focus of his remarks, to me, was extremely telling. And and the fact that he's being candid about their options, you know, what they're doing. They're listening to all their options, and they're going to consider everything. But, you know, it's going to take a long time. He has so far, I think, impressed a lot of people inside the conference and outside with that he's a quick learner. He's willing to listen. But, you know, if this is a marathon, if his tenure is a marathon, right? I mean, he's still kind of just tying his shoes. The race hasn't really even started, but he's tying his shoes very well. So, you know, and every little bit counts. every little bit counts because he's got a lack of experience in college sports. Everything he does is being watched, and every small win counts for him in terms of generating momentum and trust.
Wilner, he made a comment on Media Day about the officiating. He was asked, like, will he and Merton Hanks try to improve the officiating? And they both kind of bristled. It was more the looks on their faces that got me. Like, what's wrong with the officiating? The rest of us were like, hey, have you watched games on a week-to-week basis? Do you think that's going to be a point of emphasis moving forward, or is that down the list for the conference?
Well, I mean, it should be a point of emphasis, but you can also understand why it's now suddenly further down the list, right? Now, Merton Hanks, to me, that, you know, he's in charge of the officiating. I don't know what he'd say if you gave him a shot of sodium pentothal, but clearly there needs to be some changes, right? And I, in my opinion, they need to change out the leadership of the officiating, David Coleman. But right now, if you're the commissioner, yeah, I mean, officiating is probably like 17th on your list, right? You got the very, you know, this is an existential threat, and you got all these other things going on. But I would imagine that, you know, that has, officiating has certainly come up in private discussions, I would imagine.
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group. You can follow him on Hotline, on Twitter, at Wilner Hotline. Wilner, as you sort of sift through the George Kliavkov comments, he said that he met with all the ADs. He told them if the emphasis is going to be on winning championships in football and in men's basketball, then we got to get away from fostering parity. And he wanted to make sure that all of the ADs were going to be okay, he said, with, you know, schedules or kickoff times that weren't going to be ideal, because if the Pac-12 wants to push forth its best teams, some of the other teams are going to have bad kickoff times and bye weeks that aren't ideal. He said he got 100% consensus on that. Do you think the ADs will continue with that consensus if USC or Oregon or Washington don't get to the playoff, or will there be some belly aching?
You know, that's going to be interesting to see. I mean, it's the right approach. The Big Ten is not treating Ohio State the same way it treats Purdue, right? And you've got a bunch of ADs in the Pac-12 now that have roots and experience in other conferences where there's less of an emphasis on parity and treating everybody exactly equal, right? That said, it's certainly easier said than done in terms of, are you on board with this? Sure, I'm on board. And then all of a sudden you got your team, you're an AD, and your team gets a couple of terrible kickoff times or bad schedule. It gets a lot harder to swallow at that point. So we'll see how it plays out. That's going to be an interesting test of his leadership. And a lot of this is just gets back to the campuses being willing to put their trust in the new commissioner to get the conference to the right place down the road. They didn't have that trust under the last commissioner. There was zero trust, basically. So a lot of things couldn't get done. There is some trust now. It's early, but there's trust. So we'll see how that and other things play out. But I'm totally on. Agree with that stance. They can't treat everybody exactly equal, right? You don't want to treat anybody unfairly, but that's different than treating everybody exactly equally.
Chip Kelly, UCLA. Seat's a little warm. He's got Martin Jarmon, new AD at UCLA. It's not his guy. Should Chip Kelly be worried if he has a subpar season at UCLA?
I think so. You know, his buyout was huge a couple of years ago, but now it's down. I want to say it's down into the, you know, seven figures. I think if Chip does not have a good year, this is it. And I think that there's very good chance that the same thing happens with Clay Helton at USC. This could be the last year for both guys. Now, the bar is probably different, right? Because if Chip went 8-4, he'd be fine at UCLA. If Helton goes 8-4, I don't know what's going to happen on the SC if they finish second or third in the division. But I think both L.A. schools are certainly atop the list of potential coaching changes. And Chip, the big thing for Chip is they got to show life early. He hadn't won a non-conference game yet. So they got LSU in week two, right? Great opportunity for them. That's going to be, to me, a very significant date for UCLA in terms of showing what Chip's trajectory is going to be.
He was 46-7 at Oregon. He's 10-21 at UCLA. What's his legacy if he gets fired at UCLA?
Great question. It's probably a complicated legacy, and that's, you know, not unusual, you know, in college sports. There's no way you cannot deny the impact he had on the game itself at Oregon when he was both the OC under Belotti and then the head coach. He transformed college football. There is no doubt about that. At the same time, two NFL stints and a college stint that didn't end well can't be, you know, ignored either, right? I mean, it's almost like, it's a little bit like Larry Scott, potentially, right? I mean, you look at Larry Scott's tenure in the Pac-12, and you can kind of break it up between early success and late struggles. At this point, it's kind of the same thing for Chip, right?
Yeah, I think, and I don't like his schedule either. You point out the LSU game. There's some potential pitfalls there in the conference schedule.
Yeah.
Not as forgiving as USC's across town there.
Not at all. But one thing about that, though, is they do have a sneaky advantage in that they play Hawaii the first week. You know, it's one of the very few games on August 28th. So LSU will be their second game. But for LSU, that is going to be the opener. So that could be a sneaky advantage for the Bruins, having a chance to have played the week before they face the Tigers.
I like it. Nick Rolovich was not at Media Day. He joined me via telephone. He came in via Zoom and did a long, rambling opening statement. And what do you make of Rolovich? Will his act fly at Washington State? Will it be a distraction?
I think it's going to be a big distraction if they don't win, right? It will probably recede to the background if they win. But to me, you know, what this does, because clearly they're not going to fire him right before the season for not getting a vaccine. It sends a bad message, clearly. But what it does is it puts a lot more pressure on him to win right away, because every misstep is going to get magnified, and it's going to get compared or, you know, put in context of the fact he's not getting vaccinated. That's just going to exacerbate all of his issues. And to me, if he doesn't win, you know, he's going to have a lot more scrutiny because he didn't get the vaccine. Even though those things aren't necessarily connected, it's just the reality of the pandemic.
What are they going to do with teams that potentially have an outbreak and can't play?
Well, I think they're going to announce a policy in the next couple of weeks. But my guess is if you can't play, you're going to have to forfeit. Because, you know, with most of the teams right now, well, eight of the 12 are 80% vaccination and four are 90. You'd have to figure that by the time the season starts, you're going to have, you know, 8 to 10 at 90, 85, 90% at least. I'm guessing that there's going to be very little leniency from the conference office, and you're going to have to forfeit. And if there's a forfeiture, carries financial penalties too, right? Last year, if a game couldn't get played, everybody kind of ate the lost revenue together. But if you got to forfeit because you can't play, then that's going to be a hit to that school, is my guess.
Wilner, I really appreciate all the coverage that you do. I want to ask you before I cut you loose, you know, is there a game? Is there just games in general? The sports writer in you, what do you want to see in this upcoming season?
Well, I mean, the first thing I want to see is the season gets played, right? In full, without interruption, and that there are fans in the stands. Now, I don't know exactly how it's going to break down in the Pac-12, right? Because you got 11 different local health authorities. But I sure hope that the pandemic is under control enough that most, if not every school, can have unlimited attendance every week, right? That, to me, that's the big thing. I think people need it. The schools certainly need it. They need the revenue. It would be, to me, that's what I'd like to see. And the other thing, I'm kind of tired of the same old, same old. I would like to see Pac-12 be right in the middle of the playoff chase say, the second week of November, right? And not be eliminated right when everybody else is focused on the playoff and the Pac-12 sitting on the sideline. I just think that it would add some intrigue to the season. It would be a little bit different whether the Pac-12 ends up in the playoff or not. Just be in it, right? That would be compelling stuff.
Wilner, I appreciate you. Wish you the best. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, my friend. Take care.
There he is, the guru, John Wilner, Bay Area News Group. Really worth talking about and thinking about from a number of standpoints. But I think, you know, one of the big things that I think the conference faces is, like, officiating is a big problem week to week. We all know it. We all see it. If you don't think the Pac-12 has a problem with officiating, you haven't been paying attention. But the issue now, I think, is less important given sort of the other stuff that's going on in the landscape of college athletics. And frankly, the fact that they need a team in the playoff. So I do think officiating needs to be addressed. I don't know what Kliavkov and Merton Hakes were supposed to say on Media Day, but the expressions on their face told me that they hadn't considered getting asked that question on Media Day. Like, they were surprised that it came up on Media Day. I did, I have, you know, studied the Pac-12 officiating. I've spoken at length with David Coleman, who was the head of officials. They got some problems there. They have an unqualified person who's in charge of the officiating. Let's start there. They had a replay fiasco in 2018 that eroded trust. Let's start there. They have, on a week-to-week basis, issues in the conference that we all blatantly see that are, you know, bad officiating. We can see it. You know, I don't want to make it the thing I talk about on my show every Monday, but it comes up in the course of talking about the games over the weekend. It's got to stop being something that we're talking about every Monday on this radio show. Leave it here. Our Big Splash is next. Well, we do our Big Splash. Today's no different.
This is
the one thing you absolutely need to know today.
Look at it. Where? Down there. Must be
the Big Splash. Brought to you by the Exergen Twice Daily Thermometer.
Well, Carmelo Anthony has made it official. Carmelo and LeBron now teammates with the Lakers. Melo to the Lakers, official. 37-year-old Carmelo Anthony announcing on his own that he's joining the Lakers. He's agreed to a deal with the Lakers. Just looking at the ages of the Lakers players. Carmelo, 37. LeBron, 36. Marc Gasol, 36. Trevor Ariza, 36. Dwight Howard, 35. This is not a young team. Russell Westbrook and Kent Bazemore, both 32. But Carmelo Anthony to the Lakers. Let's kick this around. Do you like this for Melo? Let's forget the Lakers. Is this the right place for Carmelo?
I think it's the perfect place for Melo. You know, not much defense expected or required, and just shoot threes, man. That's what they need. That's what Melo does best. I think it's actually a good fit for both sides.
Yeah, all aboard the LeBron train. I mean, everyone's just trying to get a ring at this point. So, you know, it's a great spot for Melo. Probably the best shot for him to get a ring. He's back with his boy LeBron. Got to be happy for him.
Meanwhile, Blazers signing Norman Powell $1 zillion. They're giving him $18 million a year. It's not the worst deal given out in free agency, but it's a lot of money for a player they had to have. I'll call it what it is, okay, Blazer fan? It's a start. This can't be all that Neil Olshey has, but this was a start. It allows the Blazers now potentially to shop C.J. McCollum and get better a little bit. I don't want to see the Blazers run back the same team that they had a year ago, minus Carmelo Anthony. I think that they could be better. It's Neil Olshey's job to make them better, but this can't be all there is for the Blazers. Another story in the NBA on free agency, Steph Curry agreeing to a four-year, $215 million extension with the Warriors. Steph Curry, two-time MVP, first player in history to get two $200 million contracts. This will extend his contract. He was getting $45.8 million in salary for next season. He's now guaranteed $261 million over the next 5 seasons. So there you go, Steph Curry. And then the Carmelo Anthony deal is a 1-year deal with...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.